You're listening to Boston Strongcast, a place where we talk all things powerlifting, strength, and the occasional scientific nerd session. I'm your host, Kevin Kahn, the owner of Precision Powerlifting Systems, strength coach and competitive powerlifter in the USAPL. Thanks for tuning in, and let's get stronger together. Hey guys, this is Kevin Kahn with Boston Strongcast. We've taken a couple weeks off from doing the podcast. I've been kind of busy coaching for the most part, and trying to get everything in order in terms of people we want to have on here. I'm going to start a YouTube channel where kind of what I'm going to talk about today, where I'm going to do more of, instead of just putting information out there, more like day-to-day coaching decisions and stuff like that. And we'll go through that whole process. But I was putting some thought into kind of where I want to take the podcast. Now, it seems like everybody has a podcast nowadays for the most part. And I want to do something that kind of differentiates me from what they're doing. And don't get me wrong, I think there's a time and a place to put out like general information about training and all of those things. And I think if you go back and you look at this podcast, you can see kind of where we started and how we've grown over time. And I think that's pretty cool. But at this point, I kind of want to give more information about how we actually do things. More on like my thought process into coaching, the decisions that I make with programs on day-to-day stuff, choosing variations, when to pull back, when to push forward, kind of taking all the information that I've laid out in the previous, you know, I know we're getting close to 100 episodes here. So in the last couple of years, all the information that I've laid out and kind of putting it all together to show you how we train and how we get stronger. And I think an interesting part of this is we do things very differently than everybody else. I do think we're in this time period in powerlifting where higher volume programs are more of a fad's a bad word, because they definitely work. You know, there's two ends of the spectrum. On one end, you have high volume. On the other end, you have high intensity, right? Let's look at it like this. I feel a lot of the programs just lean more towards that sub-maximal higher volume end. And for us, we do a lot of heavy singles. The first 3 days of our training week are typically heavy singles. But I'm going to kind of go about how we do that process of making sure the lifters stay healthy, not only just physically, right? I think there's this misconception that heavy singles are physically demanding. And don't get me wrong, of course they are, but they don't use a lot of physiological pieces to get them done. Like there's just not a lot of energy used, physical energy, but they are mentally tiring. And if you look at a lot of the literature that looks at doing a lot of high intensity, higher frequency stuff, burnout tends to be very high. And that's something that we need to pay attention to. And everybody's a little bit different, right? So we talk about individual variation with all of this stuff. So how we filter those singles in and out of somebody's program so that they get the most exposures to heavy singles as they can possibly get. I think in a lot of cases, heavy singles, I'm not really sure where it started, where they became such a viewed in such a negative light, especially like here in America, where Westside has been, you know, the polarizing figure in powerlifting for, man, at least 30 years. You know, I think there became this interest during a period of time in the 90s and early 2000s. Everybody wanted to know what the Russians were doing because they were doing so well in the strength sports that it became this like fascination. And when we found out that they were doing a lot of sub max higher volume stuff, it just almost became the norm. And it may have even started earlier than that in terms of like training for sports in general, with Tudor Bompas, periodization, the linear models and stuff. And then, you know, later on, Mike Zordo's kind of popularizing the daily undulated periodization models out there and stuff. And every good training program needs to take all of these other aspects into consideration. So like for our programs, there's conjugate pieces in it, there's linear pieces to it, and there's undulating pieces to it. you know, I try to take literally, it's almost like a blend of everything that I've learned that has worked over time, and we've put it into one training program. So like one of the things that Shaco was very good at is just kind of managing fatigue, making sure you're tired enough that you're getting a really good training stimulus, but also making sure that you're not so tired that you're getting banged up or having to miss training days. So that's one of the things that I've really tried to take into consideration. So for him, he has, you know, a blend of high, medium, and low stress training days. And the higher frequency does seem to have some benefits. Even when you look, I understand this wasn't a peer-reviewed research study, which, you know, is an asterisk next to it, but higher frequency tends to do well in the literature. Again, this is usually on untrained lifters, short duration periods of time. I'm not too sure how well a higher frequency program holds up over the longer haul of a lifter's potential career. Like powerlifting is a sport you don't just do into your 20s and then you stop. It's a sport that you can do throughout your entire life. So making sure that the lifters stay healthy enough and are progressing enough to keep them interested and to keep them moving forward, I think is extremely important. So typical like structure of our programs, day one, we take a max effort squat. Usually this is some type of variation. We don't do a ton of comp squats. In fact, one of the things that I say around the gym is you don't know where your competition stance is going to be until you have a competition. So strengths and weaknesses, right? And I've talked a lot about this in the podcast in the past. This stuff is not linear. And your strengths and weaknesses don't just move in that same linear fashion. They're always going to be changing. So, for example, you might be really strong with a closed stance squat, but all of a sudden, 6 months later, your wide stance squat surpasses it. If you have this thinking that your comp squat is always with that closer stance, you're never really going to give yourself the option of truly experimenting with different positions to really see where those strengths and weaknesses lie. And the coach's job is to navigate this. So to always be analyzing the lifter for these strengths and weaknesses. And to be basically training should be nothing more than attacking those weaknesses. So we'll find a variation that works on one of those weaknesses. And the weakness can be mental, physical, or technical, and or technical. Like all of these aspects need to be taken into consideration. So we use what's called a constraints-led approach. It's a dynamic systems theory of training. So it takes this nonlinear model, and it also includes not just, I think, you know, for a period of time, we get really hung up. And this is why I think higher volume programs, people tend to lean on. We have a very new sport where a lot of the coaches and lifters are very inexperienced. And this includes myself. I haven't been doing this for a ton of time either. I've been coaching a long time and competing in sports a long time. But for powerlifting, it's only been a little over 5 years. So I think what we tend to lean on when we're inexperienced is that data. It's very easy to measure volumes and average intensities and number of lifts, the things that we can put concrete numbers to. And when things don't work, we just add more volume, or you just need a little bit more, or maybe you're fatigued and we have to pull back less volume, or maybe the average intensity needs to be higher, and all of these things. And not to say that those ways don't work, because they absolutely do. And the coaches who do it that way, there's nothing wrong with that. Powerlifting is a big enough world where we can have a lot of different ways of doing things. I just tend to view it in a whole different manner. So with a constraints-led approach, we need to take the environment, the lifter, and the task all into consideration, right? So with any sport that I've ever coached in the past, you need to analyze the sport first. So one of the things that like really got my wheels turning for a period of time is in any sport, you have a preseason period, right? Whether you're doing, you have conditioning practices, you have scrimmages, you have all of these things that get put together in a preseason that allow you to kind of analyze who's going to play, maybe what system fits the team best, and kind of just see where your strengths and weaknesses lie. And the goal is to be able to take those weaknesses and make them better. And to ideally, even in team and field sports, you try to peak around playoff time. You're not looking to be the best week one. You're looking to be the best at the end of the season. So, and this is how all sports go. And I don't think powerlifting should be any different. The problem with powerlifting though, is we don't compete as often. Right. So we tend to only have, on average, I bet my team competes on average probably 2 times a year, but anywhere from 1 to 3 times, I think, is pretty normal across the board for powerlifting. this doesn't give you a whole lot of information to gauge strengths and weaknesses of each lifter. This is especially true if you're spacing them out. So if somebody's only competing two times a year, they don't have a lot of experience, and there's, you know, 6 or more months in between competitions. If they're training, chances are they are going to get better. And this can be deceiving in a lot of ways. Not that, you know, you don't want to see progress. Of course you do. But, you know, the thing is if you're coaching somebody without that much experience and they're seeing progress every 6 months because they're training consistently, that has nothing to do with what you're doing as a coach. That's just kind of how things work in the beginning. You know, everybody starting out gets better for a period of time until they don't. And then that's where like more higher level coaching comes into play. That's actually a conversation I had with Shaco back when I first started working with him. Was, you know, basically I wanted to know how to become a coach at his level or whatever. And basically it was just like, it was that. It was like, you just got to gain experience, try things and pay attention. And one of the things that he had said was you got to be thinking about powerlifting 20 hours a day. The rest of the time is spent actually training, and then you're allowed to take a little bit of a mental break. I think he was half joking when he said that, but also there's a pretty serious component to it, I think, really thinking about this stuff. And I think that's why, like me being a full-time powerlifting coach, I can offer something that part-time coaches can't offer, because this is all that I do and all that I think about, and my ability to progress and gain experience is greater in that aspect of things. So one of the things that I was always trying, like, how do you analyze strengths and weaknesses, right? Yeah. You can watch a lifter at 70 to 80%, do a bunch of reps, and, you know, things will break down, but the more that they work with those 70 to 80% ranges, the better they get at those 70 to 80% ranges. But then all of a sudden you put 90% or more of 1RM on that bar, and you start to see stuff break down. And those are the real, like, telling signs. The problem is if you're not really getting into those numbers frequently enough, it's hard to work on strengths and weaknesses. It's hard to assess strengths and weaknesses. So for example, I think a lot of programs don't touch 90% until they get close to competition time. So now if you're 4 to 6 weeks out from a competition, you're starting to drive intensity and cut volume and do all those things, I think you're going to run into problems here, because you really can't work on those weaknesses until after the competition. There's some things that you can work on, but at the end of the day, you know, you're so close to a competition, I'm not sure you really want to change stuff up too much to what they're doing, because sometimes they get weaker once the technique improves. Another aspect of it is if you're not using variations and you're just using the comp stance all the time, I'm not too sure how that can actually build competence within the lift. You know, I know some programs use they might use a pause here and there, but you're not really working on any weaknesses other than, you know, if technical efficiency is a weakness, yeah, doing a lot of reps might be beneficial. You're just getting a lot of practice. But at the end of the day, you know, that lifter is probably better served training some angles that target some weaker areas or some weaker skill levels within the lift. So for example, if a lifter is constantly pitching forward and they choose to lean towards that closer stance because they're already in a more pitched angle, and it feels more comfortable to them and they have less technical breakdown, they probably need to spend a lot more time out in a wider stance where they can feel that pitching a little more. They have to use their hips and hamstrings a little bit more, and they need to work on that technique of driving the traps into the bar before they stand. And in a lot of cases, what I think happens with these lifters is they're not getting horizontal pressure off of their like feet, knees, and hips. They're just pushing straight through their feet, and having that closer stance just allows them to get away with that. That doesn't mean they shouldn't compete with that closer stance, but they should spend a lot of time training that wider stance to one target weaker muscles. And, you know, I go back and forth on whether this is even a good argument. You know, is the body 650 muscles, or is it one muscle that needs to move as one unit during various things? I'll use the narrative with those angles of, oh, wider stance, hits the hips a little bit more. But I'm not sure that's really what's happening, or their skill is just developing over time. And strength is a skill. Which is why when you practice it, the closer you get to 1RM, the more specific the skill becomes. So a max effort lift is a single where the lifter strains. I mean, that's what happens on third attempts. So I like to, you know, our day one is squats. Our day two is a max effort bench, all upper body stuff. Day three, we'll do some rep or dynamic effort bench work, then follow that up with max effort deadlift work. The deadlift actually will rotate each week. So 1 week will be reps or dynamic effort. The next week will be max effort work. And I'm a big fan of doing something before you deadlift. You never come into a meet and just deadlift, unless you're doing deadlift only, but that's very, very rare. So I like being a little bit fatigued once we get into the deadlifts. And then day four, so usually separated by 24 to 48 hours, we have more dynamic effort rep work for the lower body, so squats and deadlifts. So this is that part of that like shake out higher frequency, using kind of fatigue towards the end of the week to use lighter weights, to make them feel heavier, to force the lifter to really work on technique under those conditions. And that's what happens here. I don't care about the lifter being fatigued going into that lighter weight session. In fact, having some fatigue there is probably beneficial. And then from there, they take, you know, 48 to 72 hours off before they come in for their day one, ideally. Sometimes if the schedules get compressed, what we'll do is we'll bench day one so that, you know, the lower body type stuff is getting a little bit of a break, an extra day, and then they'll come in and they'll hit the squat on day two. And then we'll kind of figure out where we go from there for the rest of the week. But usually we just run the week as is, you know, we don't, if they feel banged up from a max effort squat, we can take deadlift reps again. Like you don't need to deadlift as frequently as squatting, and the squat will build the deadlift anyways. But as a coach, it's our job to kind of navigate these things. So I want to be able to analyze lifters under near max weights anyways, and be able to determine their strengths and weaknesses. Also, like when you look at the literature, the closer you train to 1RM, the better you improve 1RM. This doesn't necessarily mean that we need to be training at absolute loads close to 1RM. We can put lifters in positions that require the same amount of maximal effort to complete a task without using 100% of their absolute loads, or very close to 100% of their absolute loads. And this becomes another piece that the coach needs to navigate. Is this a time where you want to push absolute loads, you want to pull back absolute loads, and maybe push a deadlift where they're going to be lifting greater absolute loads? There is something to be said about the total weight on the bar and what it does to recovery and fatigue levels. We want to make sure that there's enough breaks from the max effort stuff to allow the lifter's brain, that psychological piece, to kind of recover. So that when they are lifting these max effort lifts, they can be mentally and physically prepared to do them. I don't care if they feel 100%. I'm not necessarily looking for them to feel 100%. At certain times I am. If they're constantly coming in and they're I'm making up these numbers because we don't use percentages of how they feel and stuff. But let's say they're constantly just hitting those max effort lifts at 85% of their physical and psychological abilities, there may be a time where I make day four very easy, give them a rest, only have them do 3 days so that they can come in and really hit it hard. Like you got to pick and choose your spots of where you want to do these things. Before a competition, that day four with those squats, they stop becoming light and we use a more linear model to those squats. We might start with heavy fives and work them up to heavy doubles and then move that single into the max effort week. And depending on the lifter, there may be when we are going to take that single of the stance that they're strongest at that current time for their competition, that day four might just be a rest day. It might be very light. We might still push it a little bit. It kind of just depends on the lifter, where they're at in training, what's going on in their life, their recovery abilities. And this is where like the coach getting to know the lifters becomes extremely important. So a lot of the data that we collect, so I have all my lifters, they use RPEs so that I see how hard training is for them. And I make my decisions kind of based off of that, watching their videos. So typically if they hit a true 10 on a max effort squat, the following week, they're going to get reps because you just can't keep maxing out a true 10s week in and week out. You kind of need a break. Like those general principles apply. And a lesson that I kind of learned was I was allowing the lifters for a period of time to just kind of keep going as long as they felt good. But eventually what happens is that does catch up to you and then you become very reactive to the day to day. So understanding the general principles and being a little bit more proactive. And in fact, I'm probably a hair more conservative especially Faro from a meet doing this. So if something looks like there may be 5 pounds on that bar that we could take the following week, but it was really close to a 10, sometimes I'll do reps and then we'll go get that 5 pounds the following week. Just to keep lifters healthy and moving forward. And what this ends up doing is what Shaco was doing before with high, medium, and low stress training days, is this kind of self-organizes into itself for each lifter. So the lifter's recovery abilities, the lifter's personality, all of those things kind of factor into this. And it kind of navigates itself over time. But it's up to the coach to know the lifter, to know what's going on in their life, to know their capabilities at the time. If I know somebody's losing weight, I tend to be even more conservative, where we might even go every other week between max effort and reps for all of the lifts, except maybe bench. Bench, you tend to be able to push a little bit more, especially if you're losing weight, to try to hold on to strength. It seems to be important. But other than that, like, I think the goal is to try to get as many max effort singles in throughout a calendar year as possible. It allows the coach to constantly analyze strengths and weaknesses. And what we tend to do, so, you know, when you look at the person, you know, they're not just a certain amount of volume and intensity that works to get them stronger. There's a psychological component. And in a podcast that I did with Dr. Keith Davids previously, he talked about training with consequences. And there should be consequences to training, because there's consequences to competing. And developing the skill of competition is extremely important. And you don't get a lot of opportunities to do that in the sport of powerlifting. If you're only competing 2 times a year, to have 10 competitions under your belt, it's going to take 5 years. So to develop that skill can be very tough to do. So this is why I like, on a weekly basis, 3 times a week, you're coming in and you're learning how to compete. So very often you'll see a lifter miss a weight, be able to look at their video, make an adjustment, come back and hit that weight. Or they'll hit something, it kind of falls apart, it's less than they had anticipated. Then maybe they have to make a mental note of what they need to work on technically. So then a lot of times, so I'm not a huge proponent. I don't think accessories are that important, and I don't think they really help you get stronger. I know I'm in the minority here, but I think the argument for them is they help build muscle mass, and increase muscle mass has a higher potential of contractile effort. And over, you know, you take that increased muscle mass, you put some intensity on it, you can lift more. I'm not entirely sure that that's true. It's a lot of correlation in the literature. And I don't know. I'm just not sold on that. And I'm also not sold that doing some band pull-aparts is all of a sudden going to help your upper back support and drive against a 500, 600 pound squat. Or even heavy rows are going to help you squat. Like, the angles, the movement, it's all different. And another different component of it is the psychological piece. Nobody is psychologically aroused to do a set of heavy rows, but to put a heavy weight on your back and squat it, when that's your sport and you're putting a lot more pressure on yourself to do these things, it's very different. And I think we need to train those things. And I think in a lot of cases, we need to train that mental energy and that mental focus. So I like doing back downs. I think, one, this helps the lifter kind of, they look at their max effort lift, we drop way down. So usually they'll take, we use percentages here, and percentages based off of that max effort, we'll take around 70% for sets of four. 70% is probably something that the lifter can take 10 plus. So it's a very lightweight that's going to feel heavier because they just maxed out, but it allows them to work on some things, allows them to move it quickly, get in a little bit of a groove, get some experience in a position. And just get a little bit more feedback. At the same time, that's basically our accessory work. So, you know, they're in a position that's already working weak angles. And, you know, if you want to look at it in terms of weak muscle groups, it's doing these things, but it's doing these things within the lift itself. So it's encompassing everything that's involved with the actual sport. You know, and then there's that physical component, but training is that physical component. So I'm a big fan of max effort lifts because they help train that skill to compete. They'll take 2 to 4 heavy lifts just like they will at a competition. Sometimes you smoke your opener next to a heart. Sometimes that last warm up feels heavy and you got to just battle through it, make good decisions, take what's there and move on. And I think, you know, in the beginning, when people start doing this, they'll miss a lift and like they just can't make that adjustment, get back under that bar and hit it, or make a mental note and move on type of thing. They sulk over it. So they don't even know how to miss. They just become so emotional. But over time from doing this, they just kind of learn that this is how the process goes and they do it. And I'll get into more detail on how we do all of this stuff in like future podcasts and stuff. But I really just want to like get out there how we do things and you know, where we've kind of, you know, where we're at now. And I'll use like real examples with a lot of these things. You know, there was a period of time where when things weren't working, I'd always add volume, or we'd add an extra day of bench because it doesn't seem to be going anywhere. But I'm pretty stuck into the structure of squatting 1 to 2 times a week, deadlifting 1 to 2 times a week, and benching twice a week. I just don't see a need to have to do more than that. Where that changes though is like that spectrum that I was talking before. If you're using a higher volume, lower intensity type of program, you probably need to be doing more, right? So as volume increases, intensity needs to decrease. And this is even true on a larger scale. So for us, our intensity is very high, which is why our volume tends to be pretty low. But when you actually look at like, and this is just compared to some of those like more higher volume programs, our volume tends to be very low. But to take a heavy single of a lift and then take 70% for a 4x4 afterwards is pretty tough. And our day four, I mean, you could be doing anywhere from 20 to 30 squat reps followed by, you know, 10 to 30 deadlift reps. Like it just all depends. And these will be very light, but they're done in a very short amount of time. So the work density tends to be very high. And the only reason is you just can't lift heavy every day. Like in the perfect world you can. And, you know, I think too many people too often come into the gym on a given day and let their feelings dictate how training's going to go. Don't get me wrong. There are some days that you need to pull back and everything else if you're feeling a little banged up. But what ends up happening, if you always come into the gym and you always just readjust because you feel like shit, or when you feel great, then you push. The problem is what happens when you feel like shit on a day that you're competing? You've trained to pull back in every one of those situations. You're not going to have a good meet. There's no way. You just haven't trained to have a good meet. If you have a ton of competitions under your belt, maybe at that point you're able to kind of just suck it up and do it on meet day. But the majority of people lifting in this sport don't have a ton of experience. So their only experience is when they feel like shit, they pull back. Sometimes you just got to put the weight on the bar and see what you're made of. And over time, as a person's strain develops and their ability to focus and all of those things, on a shitty day, there's sometimes many times when they're able to come into the gym and just hit those numbers. And there's a lot of times where they don't, but they'll put the weight on the bar and they'll strain for a good period of time against it. And then they, you know, they hit failure on that strain and the spotters take it. There's a lot of positive training stuff that just happened there. And I know many people listening to this will be like, oh, you should never fail a rep in the gym. But what happens is people get too scared to put weight on the bar and actually attack the weights. So what you see it is at a meet is somebody's always going to be a little bit more conservative on their third attempts because they're just too fucking scared of weights. Now, this sport isn't that intimidating. Yeah, of course it's kind of scary to unrack a weight and it feels heavy and stuff, but it's not like you're getting punched in the face. Like at the end of the day, you can't be scared to miss, and your total shouldn't be a little bit less or a lot less because you just are too scared to miss. You should have a good idea, a strong idea of what you're capable of putting on the bar any day and grinding something out and having full confidence in doing it, getting under that bar and with that full confidence, attacking the weights, not moving a little bit slower because you're unsure of yourself. And that's what happens when people are psychologically a little bit intimidated. They move slower and they just can't get that drive under heavier weights. And what you'll see too is a lot of people just give up. So they don't have that strain and just get stuck. They just go up and immediately come back down and the spotters catch the weight. That's giving up. You didn't try. Maybe like in your head, you thought you did, but that's a skill that can become developed in the gym, is learning how to strain and miss just because it's too fucking heavy, not because you're scared of the weights and that fear led to a technical breakdown or you giving up way sooner than you should have. So for us, attitude is a lot, and we train attitude and that skill of competing just like you would in any sport. Like any coach that I've ever had in any sport, it'd always be compete from first whistle to last whistle. No matter what you do, just keep competing. And that, like, you just can't learn that going through the motions at 70% for sets of six. you know, letting the internet know that, oh, well, this week it's sub six as opposed to last week it being a seven, so I'm getting better. And not that there's not benefits to those things. There are, but you're missing a bigger component of actual training. And this is what I think, you know, me discussing some of these topics will be beneficial over time. And many are going to disagree with me, and I really don't give a fuck. Keep doing what you're doing. We'll keep doing what we're doing. We've had a lot of success doing it this way. We have a strong culture, and we compete every single day in the gym. And, you know, even if I'm wrong about every aspect of this, if you learn how to compete, you learn how to literally every single day you come into the gym, you have purpose and there's intent on every rep from the empty bar to the finish of that training session, you're going to see progress. And I think that's where a lot of these higher volume programs tend to not work, is there's no focus and no intent because you're not forced to. When you know you have to take a heavy single, your mind's in a completely different spot than it is for 70% for sets of six or whatever people do these days with that stuff. You don't need to be that focused. You don't have to have intent of reps. You're just doing the numbers. And doing the numbers will get you so far, because training doesn't make you weaker. Training will make you stronger. And you might be seeing success this way, but we'll see how long it lasts. You know, I always, you know, I of course have my way of doing things, and that's what I want to share. Moving forward, I'll have like specific examples. And I'm going to use just one here just to finish off this, because it was kind of, we were kind of talking about training stuff, and I'm going to be pulling out my actual training block here. Last week, I'll go over my program. Okay. So last week, my day one was safety squat bar, close stance, low box squats with 40 pounds of chain. I'm working on some. So I did a lot of like wider stance stuff in the gear leading up to my competition, which was the second week of January. So now I'm working on angles that I haven't really touched a while. And in the gear, I was lifting sumo, so I haven't pulled conventional. So this puts me in some positions that are very similar to conventional. So hitting those hips and low back a little bit more. My hips tend to be a pretty big weakness on me. I did some light back downs at 70% for 4x3 after that. My day two. So since my meet, I've been using a football bar. I was doing all wide grip stuff because of the shirt for a few months leading up into my meet. So I haven't done anything with a straight bar since my competition. And I haven't touched a closer grip bench press in months. So I decided to do a close grip bench press max effort lift on day two. And just so you can understand kind of how training goes. So 275 is always like my last warm up. And then I usually go 295 and then kind of start making calls from there. Now, my best close grip bench press is 315. I hit the 275. It felt a little heavier than normal. So instead of going 295, I took 5 pounds less. I put 290 on it. And I actually got staple. I had good strain. I got stuck. The technique. So I ended up dumping it towards my hips a little bit when I went to press. I knew it was something I could fix. I took the 2.5s off. So I had 285 on there. And I knew if I made that adjustment, I could move this pretty quick. Based off of the way 275 felt, I just wanted to get a good solid rep in because I wanted to go up again. And I felt if I kept the 290 on there, it just takes options off the board. So maybe 290 is my max for the day. And then I go back and I hit that 290 and it's a fucking 10. And then I got stapled on one and one hard single. So I wanted to get a little bit more work in than that. So that's why I put the 285 on there. I hit the 285, moved well. Definitely a lot better than I anticipated. It actually felt a little bit better than the 275. So, you know, the fact that it felt similar to the 275, I put 15 pounds on and missed, I decided to make a 10-pound jump here. So I put 295 on there, grinded out a solid max effort single, and then I did back offs to a two board with the same grip, took a triple at 275. Worked up to that. So, you know, I got my two heavy singles in plus the miss where I strained well and then the two board work. So I had some good quality work on a day that, you know, if I left that 290 on there, I'm only getting one quality single plus the two board work. So this is where like navigating the program and developing a skill becomes more important. So now I got two plus quality lifts in there and solid two board work. So I had a really good training day. On my day three, I decided to do some long pause, wider grip bench stuff just to start hitting the pecs a little more because I was in the shirt a lot. So getting some raw pec work, I think, is important so I don't get jacked up when my volume starts increasing a little bit on these days. So I started there. And then I did a 2-inch deficit conventional deadlift. So interestingly enough, my best, and I do these deficits beltless because I'm basically my gut's too big to get down and be comfortable. So my best 4-inch beltless conventional deadlift is 540. So I kind of have these jumps that I'm always like, that help gauge kind of what to put on the bar. I took 485 and it was pretty heavy. So I ended up putting 496 on there and it was a pretty close to a 10. So I shut it down there. And like one of the things to keep in mind is I haven't been training these angles much. I basically did the exact same angles on my day one. Cause I'm, you know, I feel for a 3-week wave, just really hammering this stuff. And it, you know, if something gets like stiff or starting to feel a little uncomfortable, maybe I'll change it or do lighter stuff or whatever it is. But I feel it's really good in this block just to kind of target some stuff I haven't really targeted much. So I hit that good solid 10, good training day. My day four. So this was the first time that I decided to get in my gear since my competition. And one of the things that I want to start doing is do a lot more sets and a lot more reps just to become better technically. I was doing all I did basically was singles leading up to my competition. And for the specificity of it, I had to learn the technique under heavier weights. So that I could compete. I went 8 for 9 at my meet, missed my third deadlift at my knees, basically. So like my technique was good enough that it didn't look like my first time lifting in gear when I got on the platform, but the numbers kind of suffered a little bit because obviously I didn't have a lot of variability in there. And I would do it the same way again. I think it worked really well for a first meet, but now obviously I got to make some changes. So I got oversized briefs. So they're a size up from the suit that I competed and I hit some doubles. I worked up to 405 for a few fast doubles in just the briefs, no knee wraps, nothing like that. And I did West Side style box squats. I sat back, sat up, relaxed, you know, my legs and exploded off the box. And the point like of the box squats, just, it makes a lot of sense for me. I'm having a hard time sitting back in the suit. That was a weakness of mine. So getting a lot of practice of doing that with the box squats and sitting back a little bit further, definitely is going to help. And then I did some 2-inch deficit conventional deadlift plus deadlift below knees with mini bands. So I kept this really light. I used 275. I've seen a lot of benefits with bands with that stretch shortening cycle. So on the way down, right, the weight's coming down faster than gravity because the bands are pulling it down. And with the squat, this really trains that those elastic properties of the muscles. So the body kind of takes in that tension and then it has to immediately come up and explode and keep exploding to beat the bands on the way up. And for me, like with the conventional deadlift, I started to feel a little slow off the floor, especially where I've been using a lot of my gear too. So the gear helps it pop off the floor. So this just may be, you know, getting back into it, just my perception telling me I'm a little slow on the floor. I don't know for sure. But it's been a weakness of mine in the past. So the bands help me keep the absolute load a little bit less, especially where I did all of those max effort lifts. Like bench destroys my back, the lower box with the close stance, a lot of hips, a lot of low back, the conventional beltless deadlift, a lot of low back. In this exercise, because of the eccentric and really, you know, taking the weight and fighting flexion and staying arched on the way down with the bands and everything too. It let me use less weight, but still get a really good training effect and hopefully be really explosive out of the bottom and kind of, you know, just develop that explosiveness. And we'll see how it works. The 2-inch deficit just helps me where I stop above the ground and don't touch. It just helps me be in the same position I would be off the floor with a touch. But I don't want the bar resting. I want that stretch shortening cycle, that eccentric in there. So I use like around 275 with the mini bands and just did some 1+2 and just worked on being explosive. So I was really sore at the end of the week. And I, you know, a lot of new positions, a lot of heavy weights, a lot of max effort, a lot of pushing stuff. It was a really good training week. Now I'm actually recording this on Monday before I'm about to go into the gym and do my day one. And I'm feeling good. Like mentally, I feel good. My body feels well recovered, but I'm going to go in and do my squats just for reps today. So I'm going to take 80% of what I hit for a max effort last week, use the same variation, and just take 4 or 5 doubles. Like even though I feel good, you know, being a little bit more conservative. I don't have a meet coming up. I pushed it really hard last week. Let's get some sets and reps in there of this variation, build it up, be explosive, all those things. Bench, I'm going to do reps too, because I was a true 10 and I got beat up a little bit. So I'll use that close grip. I'll do 80% probably for 5 triples, really get in a good groove with it, work on moving it explosive, trying to get each set to feel a little bit better. And then I'll push the two board a little bit after. I'll do another heavy triple, hopefully beating last week's triple. I'm a big fan of doing board work, always heavy, not for reps. And if I, you know, and then, you know, depending how I feel, I might get in the shirt and just do some, maybe some one board work. You know, and if I decide to do that, so if I'm feeling good, I'll skip the board work on my day two and I'll do the board work on day three in my shirt, which is kind of where I'm leaning now, but we'll see. And if I do that, I'll drop the percentage of the close grip bench work the day on day two. So I'll use 75% for triples instead of the 80, and just really work on moving it quick and then try to apply that speed to the board work in the shirt. And then for the deficit deadlifts, I'll probably take 80% for a couple doubles, you know, probably 4 doubles of those. 80% of 496 is pretty light for me. You know, it's around 405, which is 67% of my best deadlift. So that'll be good. So like the good thing about using the max effort lifts for the percentages, you get kind of accurate numbers for where you're at. If I tried to use 80% of my best effort deadlift here, it would probably really beat me up. But this, I'll be able to move quick, good technique. Everything will, you know, we'll get in a nice little groove. If I feel good by the end of the week, I'll do those box squats in my briefs with a little bit more weight. If I don't, I'll take the same weight and just take it for more sets, or the same number of sets and just try to move it quicker. So there's options here. But the goal in the briefs now is to continuously hit depth and be explosive in just the oversized suit bottoms. So I'll do that there. And again, like, you know, there's planning going on here. Like I have a general idea, but it's going to be adaptable for kind of how things are going, and you got to make adjustments. And I do the same thing for my lifters. So I'll put something on paper and, you know, if we need to talk about it, we'll talk about it. Or usually just the next week I'll adjust accordingly if they're getting a little bit too beat up, you know? So like my RPEs, if I put them in, if I was one of my own lifters and I'm just looking at my sheet for the week before on my day four, they would have been pretty high. So knowing that, usually I tend to pull back a little bit the next week, allow them to recover, and then we'll pick it back up again. And usually by then, even if you leave day four the same for recovery reasons, you start to see those RPEs drop. And then I'll keep the deadlift almost the exact same as I did last week, try to move it explosively, maybe add a set or do a 1+3 instead, but very, very little change on that. but I think that's a nice little insight into how kind of like a week to week goes. If, you know, after my meet, I didn't do a ton of like really heavy max effort stuff. I really kind of eased back into training. So last week was the first week that I had done all three, pushed it hard, had a really good training week like that. At this point, it's probably going to be very hard to do two in a row like that. So I might like do well in a squat, but then you start to see it fizzle out. And I don't want that to happen. So what I'm going to do here is just kind of pull back a little bit this week. So when you look at my week, when I just talked about all of that stuff, if anything, I'll probably have a max effort bench. If I decide not to get in the shirt, I'll do close to a max effort on the two board work after the rep work. If I do decide to get in the shirt, I'll push the shirted board bench a little bit to, you know, something that's around a RPE 9.5 for a single or a double or something like that. Probably just a single. And then maybe use a bigger board and do some back offs or something. Depending on how many sets I get in, but I might just cut it at that single and go deadlift. So we'll see. And I'll come back the following week, which would be week 3 of the wave, and I'll try to beat all of my previous bests from week 1. And then I'll ease into a new training week again. So for now, I think that's a good example, and I'll try to get into more details of stuff that comes up. I'll just like kind of make notes and be like, hey, this is something I want to talk about. And if people want stuff to talk, hopefully like I'll put enough information out there on how to run our programs, and you guys will be able to run them a little bit on your own, and you might have some questions and stuff, and I'd love to be able to like throw that stuff out there. For now, you can follow me on Instagram. It's KWCan, our team, Precision Powerlifting Systems. Stay strong, Boston.